right now at Kohl's. Take an extra 25% off top active brands, including Under Armour for her. Get Nike shoes for the family, $48.75 and under, and save on Levi's denim for the family. Plus, get limited contact store drive-up, and get even more for your wallet with Kohl's Cash. Shop Kohl's and Kohl's.com. 25% off Under Armour ends August 9th. Nike ends August 8th. Levi's sale ends August 30th. Offers and coupons do not apply. Select styles. Some exclusions apply. See store or Kohl's.com for details.
Hello, wonderful people. I am Sunaina Nair, and I welcome you to the Keep It Alive series with a special series of conversations we will be having with leaders in the people's domain, constituting HR leaders, leadership coaches, HR strategists, and senior consultants who will help us understand various facets of leadership and people management, its challenges, primarily with respect to employee engagement, work-life harmony, and maximizing human potential. Our first such conversation is with Pratap Nambiar, founder and chairman of Thought Perfect, a Singapore-based firm providing coaching and mentoring services to CEOs. Pratap is a corporate veteran with over 35 years of experience across geographies and production services and has been to the executive coaching space since about 11 years now. Pratap has contributed to several thought leadership publications and is also a member of the KPMG Asia Pacific Management Committee as well as the Global Market Steering Group. In this conversation with my colleague Manoj Arvindakshan, Pratap Nambiar converses about his journey into executive coaching, mentoring primarily Asian business leaders. He speaks on leadership, its essence and its common blind spots, and sheds some interesting insights on managing stress and time and how it's a challenge that almost every business leader grapples with. He also mentions how work-life balance is more about maintaining a harmony and how a leader is likely to influence his peers and subordinates at the workplace through his passion. He also mentions that while the role of a leader is to best understand and facilitate the growth of every employee, reach his or her fullest potential, how very few organizations have succeeded in doing so, primarily because of their focus on the horizontal growth of the employees, completely overlooking, unfortunately, the vertical growth of employees. Now, what is horizontal versus vertical? If you aren't very familiar with those terms, please listen to know more. Towards the end, Pratap delves into his love for poetry and sports. The writers Workshop Calcutta had published his first collection of verses called Over the Years. Pratap is also the recipient of the Editor's Choice Award for Outstanding Achievement in Poetry 1997 from the National Library of Poetry, USA. His latest book, Straight from the Heart, was launched by Ethos Books and the National Art Council, Singapore. Pratap is also an avid sports person, playing tennis, squash, golf, cricket, etc., and also has been the ex-vice president of the Singapore Lawn Tennis Association. Pratap shares his love for cricket, which he used to play at the university level, sharing some of the key life lessons he's derived from cricket. He loves to play tennis, which he says is life, and also reads out a short poem on happiness from his book Straight from the Heart. Now let's get going. Happy listening.
Welcome to this episode of the podcast, Pratap.
Thank you, Manoj. Looking forward to it.
Yep. Let's start with your coaching journey.
Mm-hmm.
You were a senior executive at one of the top accounting firms, and you held various other senior positions, and you switched over to executive coaching.
Mm.
Can you tell us a bit about the how and the why?
It was an interesting set of circumstances. What I did while I was working with one of the big four firms as a senior partner was invest a lot of money in training and development of my colleagues. I had mixed results because what I quickly realized while I was spending very large sums of money was that you can train people for skills. But if you want to help individuals to change their behaviors, to change the way they show up, the way they see the world, then no amount of training can help. And that's when I started then looking for other ways of helping to transform individuals right from their core belief systems in terms of the way they think and therefore the way they behave. And I realized that that is only possible through a deep level intervention like coaching. It has been an amazing, fulfilling journey. It's been 11 years now since I've been working with very senior leaders, mainly CEOs, and transforming them and changing their internal operating system, changing their consciousness. Because leadership, particularly, is not just about competencies alone. It's all of these competencies that are required, which is universally required, is built on the platform of consciousness. So what is their consciousness, which is the sum total of their beliefs, their assumptions, their values? That needs to be rejigged because that's what helps them to evolve as a person.
So it goes a lot more, beyond technical skills and competencies.
Correct. And this is really one of the great challenges of leadership today is that most leaders tend to think that the answer to all problems is technical, which is that you throw technical solutions at all kinds of problems because the belief is that, I can throw more skills, I can throw more talent, I can throw more capabilities, more competencies. But that's really not the answer because adaptive challenges in particular requires a whole new way of thinking, a whole new mind.
You said you've been in this for about 11 years now. In executive coaching, some key highlights, memorable experiences, especially with respect to managing stress, managing time.
Well, one of the greatest curses of the corporate world today is the extent to which executives are steeped in anxiety. Anxiety is the most prevalent private emotion in public life. And it is this level of anxiety from which people operate that pulls them into a way of being that is entirely reactive and one which does not allow them to develop and to grow and to become bigger in terms of the way they think. So my experience of uplifting leaders, my experience of getting leaders to evolve and go to the next stage of adult development, it's what has been the most fulfilling when the complexity of their thinking has been raised to a level that is now able to deal with the complexity of business.
Were there any, low lights or undesirable experiences?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There are people... people tend to err on the side of arrogance or on the side of insecurity. So there is what Professor Keegan at Harvard calls leaning towards arrogance or leaning towards humility. And they're both inappropriate by themselves if you take that strength and overuse it.
A lot of the work you've done has been with Asian business leaders, or major part of your work.
Yes.
So, what's really been the toughest challenge or challenging part of being a coach?
Well, the toughest part of it is perhaps for me not to be judgmental I have to recognize that when I work with somebody as a coach, then I have to see that person through a different lens, which is a lens of compassion and kindness, and approach the individual from that perspective and really not judge them in any way. That for me, it is much better now, but when I first started, it was very difficult for me not to fall a victim to my own judgment.
We'll talk about managing time. And time is the scarcest resource, the manager's most precious resource. But it's a key issue for the business leaders. And I think you wrote an article earlier this year on key leadership disciplines. And I think you mentioned management, time management as being one of those key disciplines. Mm-hmm. Could you elaborate a little bit more on your thoughts on this?
Yes, in this last 11 years, if there are things that I have observed, along with managing time and interpersonal interaction and the kind of choices, the quality of choices you make, I mean, these are absolutely critical for leadership effectiveness and leadership success. Managing time is absolutely universal. It is almost every other leader that suffers from this challenge of what is the best use of my time and how do I make the most use of it? And they find it very hard to extricate themselves. They are passionate about the work they do, obviously, and so there is very little of themselves to go around. And it also comes from the fact that there is the belief that if anything has to happen well, I have to be involved. And therefore, there is a limited desire to let go.
It's the controlling nature that you talk
about. Yes, the controlling nature that you talk about. And it's actually a kind of a catch-22 situation because some of my CEOs do tell me, saying, look, Pratap, we understand what you're saying. And I have let go and I have delegated, I have empowered, and all kinds of things have gone wrong because my people let me down. And when they let me down, ultimately, I have to pick up the threads myself. I have to go back into the trenches again myself, and I've got to rework it all. And why go through all that trouble? Why not I get involved from the start? So it becomes a kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
You have a couple of or multiple business interests. You travel extensively. How do you manage your own time?
Well, the first question to ask yourself, and I do ask this question to many of my clients who I coach, because they do have issues related to time that they discuss with me, and that is, are you working to live or are you living to work? That's an important distinction. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that, and here I touch upon the concept of work-life balance, because there is an assumption that life and work are two separate aspects of the way you live your life. It doesn't necessarily have to be so. In fact, I like what Jeff Bezos says, and he doesn't call this work-life balance. He calls it work-life harmony.
Yeah.
Right? So you can actually establish harmony between what you're doing and the whole aspect of even what Mahatma Gandhi said, when what you think and what you say and what you do is all in sync and is in harmony, that's the only time when you can find that you're happy. And it is this allocation of what you choose to do and what you choose not to do is the way you live your life.
And there are CEOs like David Solomon of Goldman Sachs and Emmanuel Faber of Danone, and a lot of people like them who are actually wearing their passions outside work on their sleeves. And they are not the typical or, you know, what you would expect the current Silicon Valley CEOs. I mean, they're very old school CEOs, but they are kind of creating a new trend. How do you think this is evolving and how...
Well, there are different types of... I mean, Mark Schneider, CEO of Nestle, for example. I mean, for him, his job is his passion, and he doesn't feel in any way that he's holding back or that he's getting less out of life by giving more to work. On the other hand, there are people
one of my colleagues, for example, Mark Weinberger, who's the CEO of Ernst & Young, I mean, he was always dedicated to his family. And for him, that was what mattered the most. And we've known instances of him giving up meetings or client meetings or what have you to go because he has a program to attend or he has to take his daughter to some classes or what have you. And he doesn't feel any kind of guilt in doing that because he is dedicated and he knows what his priorities are and what gives him joy. And so he does what he does. And that is also another way of looking at it from the perspective of how the CEO, Marissa Mayer of Yahoo, talks about rhythm and talks about knowing what you're giving up. You know, what is important? What matters to you? What is close to your heart? And then working with that rhythm in terms of not compromising on those core values, which are very important for you. And so you stay true to that. Now, you can have people like the CEO of carrentals.com, that's Hendrik Kjellberg, who can bicycle 16 miles to work and feel great about himself. And he's able to balance his need for that kind of physical activity, which is necessary for him, and at the same time, not take away from the hours of work. So you find a balance. So hence the term work-life balance, right? Because you're finding the ability to balance your needs both inside of work and outside of work.
So do you think people like the people you mentioned, Marissa Mayer or the CEO of carrentals.com, and these CEOs, their definition of success is different? They define success differently?
No, it's not that they define success differently. They are all governed by the same definition of success in terms of their professional goals, which is that they have to return the kind of investment that they have provide the return on investment for their stakeholders. So that is really what they are focused on doing. But while they are doing that, they are also looking after their own selves, their own inner selves. So then the question comes up saying, is the professional different from the person? In the last 11 years of work that I've done, I've come to the conclusion that you cannot really separate the two. It's like, what Ram Dass famously said, wherever you go, there you are. You are everywhere. So your inner self, your inner being, who you are, whether you're at work or not at work, is exactly the same person. So you cannot create these two different personas and say, this is me at work and this is me at home. That is just fooling yourself.
But how important is it for people, and especially the senior business leaders, to switch on and off from their work? And because, I mean, the need to recharge and refuel themselves. Because if they're always turned on and, switched on and... It must be taking a lot of mental energy.
As I said, it all varies from person to person. There are some people, for example, who I know cannot focus or concentrate for more than an hour at a time. And at the end of 1 hour, they have to get up and they've got to walk around and they have a little golf club and a putting surface in their office, and they do something that just sort of get them to unwind a little bit and then get back again. I know people who, for example, at the end of half a day, practice mindfulness and breathing and prepare themselves for the second half of the day. It depends entirely on each individual's internal needs. If a person is evolved, so for example, in my own case, I've been a corporate person, but I write poetry. I read. I find that I require this kind of expression. My creativity has to find an outlet. And this is the way I express myself. And when I do that, I have a sense of completeness and wholesomeness which comes to me, which then feeds into the other part of me, which also then begins to do very well. If I'm able to tap into my own energies and my own needs and how I can unwind, if I go to a theater, if I go and watch a play, or if I'm just out walking with nature, being with nature is a way of recharging myself, each person to herself.
Does it help to have some kind of a hobby or an outlet.
Yes, an outlet. Yes, it is an outlet. It is a way of expressing yourself. Right? It could be just playing golf. It could be playing tennis. It could, you know, in an activity which is sport. It could be a team event.
What's the kind of influence that a leader who is actually pursuing something like that, an interest like this, have on the rest of the organization? Do you think the leader actually can foster, you know, behaviors like that down the line? And
the responsibility of the leader is to help his people to fulfill their potential,
okay,
whatever it takes in terms of how to help them to flourish. So different people will be motivated differently. That's the job of the leader, to know which kind of person needs to be motivated in what way, to be able to bring the best out of them so that they can perform to their fullest potential.
Do you think organizations are doing enough to really understand their people at such a level?
I don't think so. And there's a fundamental reason for that, is because I do not think that organizations today have actually seen the link between the mental evolution and growth of individuals in an organization and business performance. What they are doing, so we are talking about vertical development versus horizontal development here. Organizations and leaders tend to invest a lot in the horizontal development of people, which is fundamentally giving them more abilities, giving them more skills, getting them to become subject matter experts, getting them to understand the industry better or a function better. What they do not invest in is vertical growth, which is what we call the growth of adult development, growing from one stage of development to the next stage, which is a vertical process. When your capacity of the mind, the structure of the mind, it goes from one level of complexity to the next level of complexity, to be able to evolve and think from a whole different perspective, and connect that to the ability of these people then to help the organization to meet its adaptive challenges. And that's the connection that they miss out on, is that my responsibility as a leader and as an organization is to continuously invest in the upliftment and growth of the development of the mind of the people, so that they make better decisions, so that they manage time better, so that they have better quality of interpersonal interactions, so that as an organization, they get the benefit of a superior performance.
Does balance ever come into your discussions, Bala, you know, when you talk to CEOs, achieving balance, is that a topic? And how do you actually guide CEOs to?
The idea, the discussions that we have is both about themselves and what they need to do for their people. So when it comes to to questions of balance, it is a question of asking themselves what it is that they need to be doing to be able to work to their own fullest potential, which means that they're not just going through the motions. This is not about clocking time. It is about doing your very best, and it is about maximizing your own potential and knowing that you're doing the right thing. So it is not, am I sitting here till 8 o'clock at night or 6 o'clock, or do I even go away at 4 o'clock? It doesn't matter. What really matters is, what are you doing to channel your own energies and use it in a way that will bring the best possible outcomes for your organization? And the same applies to the people as well. So it is not about clocking time. It is about finding the right balance for each individual, individually, not as a mantra.
I know you're into continuous learning, and I mean, constantly looking to acquire new skills and qualifications. I mean, what's keeping this hunger alive?
That's a really good question, because my children ask me this question as well. My children keep telling me, why are you continuously going on learning and learning and learning and not stopping? And I said, look, there's only one reason, is because my focus is on my clients. My focus is on doing my very best for them. And therefore, I'm always looking for new ways. I'm looking for new things. I'm looking for new ideas. I'm looking for new ways of being through which I can actually help them to transform themselves, help them to unleash their potential, help them to flourish. So I'm on that journey of search. The more I'm able to learn and imbibe and get new ways of thinking, the more I can actually pass on to them in terms of suggesting it to them as options and ideas for us to brainstorm. Because keep in mind, I'm not an advisor. I'm not a consultant. I'm not telling people what to do. I'm just there challenging their own thinking and helping them to think in different ways and explore options and creativity in ways that can be of the best outcome for them.
You've also been an avid sports person. You used to play cricket, I believe.
Yes, I did, yes.
How long ago was that?
Well, that was a long time ago when I was in college. And it was like any kid growing up in India, cricket was the first sport everybody played. Right? And so I played that to some level, at the club level and college level and university level. And that was fun. But I took some many very interesting lessons away from that too.
From cricket?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, since the World Cup is going on and I mean, it's the cricket season, I mean, why don't you share some of those?
One of the things that I distinctly recall is what Sunil Gavaskar, who was a great hero of mine before Tendulkar, of course, he used to always talk about taking fresh guard.
Okay.
And every time he scored 50 runs, he would take fresh guard and say, now I need to score the next 50. So it's kind of resetting yourself, recalibrating yourself, and not getting carried away from by the fact that I already scored 50. No, I'm working towards my next 50. And therefore, you accumulate more and more and keep the hunger going. Right? It is about this desire to perform to your fullest potential, not getting carried away by what you've already done, but taking fresh guard every time and making sure that you're starting with a process of resetting. It's like hit your reset button and reinvent yourself again and again and again. That was a learning.
That's interesting. And anything from Tendulkar that you've learned? Since you mentioned Tendulkar.
There was a time when, I think it was at a game at Lord's, where he scored a century and he did not play a single offside stroke.
That was at Sydney.
Oh, was that Sydney?
Sydney.
Yeah, it was in Sydney.
2003 series.
Yeah, so he cut out that shot because he said, this is my get-out shot. I'm not going to play that get-out shot. So again, huge learning of self-awareness. And I tell this to my leaders when I coach them, saying, do you know what is your get-out shot? If you know what's your get-out shot, what are you doing about it?
Understanding one's weakness. I mean, the get out shot is really knowing one's weakness.
Knowing exactly what's going to get you out and what's going to derail you and therefore not be able to achieve your objective. And therefore, how do you cut out those kind of self-limiting behaviors?
It's very interesting. I know that knock of Tendulkar has been talked about quite a lot. Didn't think of that. I mean, that restraint, and people talk about restraint in that innings, but I think self-awareness is not really...
Yeah, it's the self-awareness, you see, and when you combine self-awareness with discipline, because just being aware is not enough, but then you need to have the discipline to be able to make sure that you don't fall into that trap, that you don't go down that path again, and to know that you have set controls in place individually yourself and to know the triggers that come.
You play tennis as well regularly?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And you've been a passionate tennis follower?
I've been playing tennis now for 40 years.
And what's tennis meant for you?
Well, tennis is life, right? That's the slogan for me. I think it was Peter Burbosch who actually said that tennis is life. Again, it's so many lessons in terms of what tennis has taught me in terms of, even now, for example, Professor Keegan, when he talks about deliberately developmental organizations and he talks about helping every individual in the organization to understand what is his backhand. Everybody has a weak backhand. Most people manage good forehands, but they all have weak backhands. And then the question is, do you know what is your backhand and what are you doing to improve your backhand? More importantly, what are you doing to help your colleague to improve their backhand? So the backhand here is a metaphor referring to your weakness. Again, self-awareness in terms of knowing the fact that I, on my backhand, have got limited abilities, or I do not have the mindset that is required to be able to play my backhand the way I should. So what do I need to do? How do I need to prepare? What kind of techniques do I need to master? What is the mind? How should I be thinking about it? What is the self-talk? What's my internal narrative? How should I be talking to myself? How should I motivate myself? When I see that ball coming into my backhand, what should I be saying to myself? Should I be saying, oh my God, here it comes, this is terrible? Or I'm saying, I look forward to this. This is phenomenal. This is where I show how well I have been able to master this. Come to me. Let me play you.
Your all-time favorite tennis player?
Well, Nadal today, along, of course, Roger Federer, and Rod Laver. I still say Rod Laver number one. And a very close number two between Federer and Rafa.
You also published an anthology, Straight from the Heart, a few years ago. You mentioned that you write poetry and that's your outlet. You know, this poet's persona, I mean, how has really helped you in your professional life? I mean, has it helped you professionally as a coach or other work that you're doing?
A poet is a reflector. So it is someone who reflects deeply about things, issues, circumstances, situations. So you need to find the words to express your feelings, because a lot of poetry is about emotions, it's about what you feel. Therefore, to visit the places that most people would not visit internally, inside yourself, to be able to go on that inward journey is the work of poetry. Is a very important development. I think that poetry is something that everybody should learn. It is wordsmithing. It is about expressing the words in the most beautiful way. It could be just a sentence. It could be two sentences. It is this ability to go deep into yourself and to be able to find the words and to connect with people at the level of the heart. And that is the other messaging, which is so crucial, is that it's not all about the mind. It is about bringing this balance between the mind and the heart and the body.
That's very interesting, because you talk about the mind, the body, and the balance and happiness. And I think I will, the last poem in your first book is Happiness. And I loved it. Or it's very simple, and it kind of shows that the simplest things in life often lead to the greatest happiness. Would you mind reading it for our listeners? And I think
more than happy,
very interesting. It is
what I wrote at the time when I wrote it, was about happiness. And again, it came out of reflection, deep reflection, sitting back and thinking. So happiness. Coming home from school on a Saturday afternoon. This is day school, no uniforms. With two comics in the bag, no homework, a place in the team for the evening's cricket match, and my favorite fish curry for lunch was perhaps the most happiness I think I have ever known.
On that happy note, thank you very much for that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
right now at Kohl's. Take an extra 25% off top active brands, including Under Armour for her. Get Nike shoes for the family, $48.75 and under, and save on Levi's denim for the family. Plus, get limited contact store drive-up, and get even more for your wallet with Kohl's Cash. Shop Kohl's and Kohl's.com. 25% off Under Armour ends August 9th. Nike ends August 8th. Levi's sale ends August 30th. Offers and coupons do not apply. Select styles. Some exclusions apply. See store or Kohl's.com for details.